Basically, it's a place where persons who are looking for more than the ordinary can come and gather and rub shoulders and discuss and, you know, hang out, and, you know, it's not a formal place. You've got a brochure from Terry here, and you've got a brochure. So tonight's topic is belonging to the universe. So the first issue that we're going to address is, do we belong? Or I guess we consider the flip side of, do we not belong? Now I know that, especially in today's ecologically minded world, people are very much stressing that we belong, that we are a part of the cycles of nature, that we must view the world as a interconnected web of life to understand our place in it. Old gods are dead and dying and dead, and that there's a new mythology arising, and that new mythology is that we are all the earth, and that the earth is alive. People are feeling quite good about this new concept, as you might say, that We are part of the universe. We are the universe in that, according to our consciousness and our actions, we make the universe what it is. So in other words, we shouldn't dirty the very bed we have to lie down in. We should take care of the environment. We should recognize brotherhood amongst all human beings. And then, of course, you can really get into what's called deep ecology, in which it is said that human beings shouldn't even consider that they have any kind of preeminent position amongst the other species. Actually, the other species are just as human. So, it is also said that Western civilization has trouble because it doesn't have a sense of meaning. People can't see their place in the world, in the cosmos anymore. Whereas if you encounter any aborigine or natural living tribe in Polynesia or the aborigines in the outback of Australia, they have some sense of cosmic meaning, and they have some sense of belonging and a sense of how they fit into the universe. So many Westerners have realized their deficiency in that respect, and they're saying that the real quest is to find meaning. So all these things are going on. In any way on that point?
Well, I wonder how people feel about the belonging to the universe to the extent that we are the universe, which is within the identification that we are the universe, so that we belong very intimately.
Yes, funny that you would say that. Now, I think we need when we say we are the universe, now, what do we actually mean by that? I mean, to the extent that it can be described.
Well, I don't think it can be. I don't think it can be, and I think that comes down to an experiential. I think it's beyond description and beyond representation. I just put it forward as actually in support of the statement that if that is true, that if we are the universe, then we certainly belong because of the complete identification. I mean, that is the Zen claim. It's a bold and mind-boggling one, but that is the true.
Well, we meet a lot of people who say that they are the universe. Of course, generally when I meet someone and they tell me, we are the universe, I say, well, that means you're the southerlies, you're the sun. What exactly do you mean? Especially when I'm careful.
Well, you can't. It's beyond language. But I mean, but it's not beyond experience. I think that's the difference. I mean, it can't be represented. It can't be described or articulated, but it can be experienced.
If it can't be put into language, then how is this experience communicated? How do we know that there's an experience?
I don't think it can actually be communicated in the normal way, in what we normally call communication. I don't think it can be. I mean, I'm only trying to posit from Zen point of view. I think that it can't be communicated in the way that we normally call communication.
All right. Now, of course, we don't want that kind of notion that we are the universe. It's quite a deep statement. We don't want to kind of let it just fly and kind of, that sounds really, we should try to, we hear that quite a bit. We should try to analyze it in some way. I am the universe. I mean, there should be some way we can get a bit of a handle on that. Does that mean that I know what's going on in Los Angeles right now because, well, in some way I am Los Angeles? Or does it mean that my body is made up of atoms that were formerly in Los Angeles?
I think it can and potentially mean that, and some people have that capacity, but not necessarily. I think that comes down to a particular individual, I think. I mean, some people actually do have that capacity to know what is going on in Los Angeles right now, and by locality in that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that everyone would have that. I just wondered how other people, felt about that, because in relating to it, it is certainly some people do make that claim. It is a Zen. It is the, the Zen real purpose, but that's the practice leads to that.
Yeah, you get a lot of people who obviously aren't practicing any kind of discipline at all. They've got spiritualists, but they do go around saying, yes, we are the universe. And, of course, that doesn't mean that there aren't any serious practitioners who, but still, I think we need some more clarification. Because ordinarily, when we hear the statement, I am the universe, I mean, we kind of, our first reaction is get serious, mate. How can you be? What do you mean by you are the universe? I mean, you are everything, or you are? Or what does it mean?
Well, it could mean that there is a new consciousness. Actually, we were talking quite a lot about mythology last year, but myths. But I'm thinking more instead of a new myth, as a new consciousness, which I find a lot more useful. Rather than a new myth, and perhaps it is a new consciousness which does people do see themselves as not only belonging to the universe but being the universe themselves, and perhaps it is indicative of a new consciousness that is around, that is prevailing at the moment.
Could people feel that person who feels individual feels they can make that step that they are the universe is individual who is able to experience as fully as possible for a human being to experience the oneness of the universe and all that is, therefore, experience the fusion. They are so totally at one with all that is that people here and there are yet. Apart from the person who can represent the intellectual representative, they make it as an expression of truth that is possibly such an individual.
Now, Richard, still, I would be curious, even, let's say, one actually feels connection with everything, feels an intimate sense of being in touch with everything, does that mean you are everything? I think
it's beyond my experience. I'm not able to comment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think myself also that there are people who claim to have come to that point. And I think that for a lot of us, we have times when we feel a totality or a oneness, but not to the extent where we would say that we are the universe.
How do we know that we're actually experiencing the totality?
I think that it is an experience that we have. Like, how do we know that we're drinking water by drinking it? How do we know that we're experiencing the totality by experiencing it? And that in itself tells us.
Well, for example,
same as for drinking water. For drinking water, we know what water is by experiencing the totality. We know what that is by the experience.
For example, if I'm a little boy and you show me, I used to live in New York, and I was coming back to New York on the bus from Philadelphia. So New York's a city of 12 million people, especially in one area. Philadelphia is about 2 million. It's 3 million. So on the bus back to New York, there was some. Actually, the bus was leaving New York and going to Philadelphia. So on the bus leaving New York were some people who lived in small towns near Philadelphia. Probably small town size of Mongomatas, something like that. So, well, they lived two hours away from New York. The kids had never been to New York before. So they were always exclaiming on the bus,
"Oh, Mom, how big New York is! How extraordinary! Wow, Mom, did you see those buildings?"
And of course, I was pretty cynical. I was relaying this story to my own mother. I think, these people, they came to New York for a day, they just saw one section of one tiny sliver of the center of New York, and just going on and on about, how New York, but they actually only saw, about New York has composed of 5 districts, and Manhattan is where all the most of the skyscrapers are, and these people saw the tip of Manhattan. It's like seeing of Auckland, they saw Fort Street.
Oh, Auckland, amazing!
But my mother was like, "Don't be so cynical, these people are trying to have a good time, But the point is, we may think we're experiencing totality, but we may actually just be experiencing a tiny aspect and thinking, well, this is so extraordinary, it must be totality.
In the hologram model, features a piece of that one mere part, minuscule part of it, has got the entirety in it, so that it would be possible to go to New York and see just a very small part of it, and still, in terms of holograms, see the whole of the experience, the whole of the city, just from a mere part of it.
Well,
I mean, I'm just putting forth the hologram and the idea of that. That it is possible to know the totality from experiencing a fraction of the whole.
To know the totality, maybe, but to be the totality? And why do we want to be the totality? To be the universe, whether we can be or not. Why?
I don't have any particular desire to be the universe. That it might just simply be a fact that we are. I mean, yeah, it may not. I don't know that it comes down to desire. I mean, some of us may wish to. I don't actually have a particular desire to be the universe, but it may be that in my ignorance, it may be that I am the universe. It's possible.
Very interesting. Now, how is it? Let's say we are the universe, whatever that means. Now, we're not sure about that yet. But we are the universe, and now we forgot we're the universe, or what happened? Why did we lose our universal whatever, and why did we lose track of that? The universe has lost track of itself.
Well, it's possibly unrealized. I mean, it's a question that we've... Say, for example, that we have been, let's say that we are the universe, that we have been from the beginning, but we simply haven't realized it. So it's unrealized. I mean, we're in the realization.
Unrealized universes.
I mean, we're doing that all the time. We suddenly have a realization, we have a realization, and then we, for a long, long period of time, we've been ignorant, and then we have some kind of a realization. Well, it could. That could also apply to this. I think we just have to. I mean, I don't know. I haven't experienced.
I understand where you're coming from.
I'm
just making points.
Yeah, but in terms of this experience, I believe that we all at some times have some experiences of unity and totality to varying degrees and varying intensities.
Yes, so...
And the ultimate for that is possibly the identification with the whole universe seems to me the ultimate type of unification.
What I'm trying to point out is there may be a difference between having a feeling of unity and a feeling of at-one-ness with everything and the actual being everything. In other words, I'm going to get back to Vedic terms. John's used to that. There may be a difference between qualitative oneness and quantitative oneness. In other words, the part has the same quality as the whole, but the part is still the part, the whole is the whole. Just like gold, a piece of gold has the same quality as the whole gold mine. But if you have a piece of gold, you won't say, I have the gold mine. But certainly, they are of the same quality. So, I think that these Vedic terms are very useful because they definitely clarify a lot of murky issues. The difference between qualitative oneness and quantitative oneness. Now, what we have today, I know you're not like that. We have a lot of people running around thinking they are quantitatively the one. They actually talk like that. So I think that's a problem. Now, qualitative oneness, personally, I'm into that. But to say that we are the one in quantity, that's a bit... So I think we're really good flesh to say that we are the everything. Because first of all, this planet is very tiny. This universe is very tiny. And there are countless universes.
South.
Well, I think it's meant it's a qualitative. I interpret that as a qualitative, in the qualitative sense, not the quantitative.
Yes, but as I said, you've got lots of people running around who actually, I meet them all the time. We are the universe. We are it. We are the everything. And they're quite adamant about it. So, and in fact, that leads to the next thing. They say is that we are the supreme, we are the ultimate. We've just forgotten. Then I have to ask, well, how does the supreme become unsupreme? If you are the supreme it or whatever, that word is very popular, whatever you want to call it. If you are the supreme whatever you want to call it, how did you lose track of your supremacy? And now you are forced to undergo birth, death, old age, and disease. And if you are actually, okay, let's say you're not the supreme, but you're just the universe. If you're claiming, okay, let's say a person's claiming to be the universe, why is it that you're under the laws of the universe in terms of decay, in terms of disease and death? Obviously, there's something in the universe that's stronger than you, because you cannot stop your old age, disease, and death. You can't fight those laws of nature. So that means, obviously, instead of being the universe, you're under the control of the universe. In other words, we're under the control of the laws of nature. Now, we were just talking yesterday, I was reading in one book by Deepak Chopra, I think Ageless Body Time is my step, he was summarizing it. So, he was saying that we can reverse the aging process if we can just change our mentality, if we can just change our attitudes, make them positive. There won't be any such thing as aging if we can just get control of our attitudes and think right and be right in our consciousness. So, wow, this definitely sounds good. I mean, this book was the number one bestseller in the USA. But then I began to think. First of all, without getting into whether people can control their attitudes enough to stop old age, it seems people can't even control their hunger, control their thirst, control their passions. What does Deepak of? Control the attitudes to stop aging. These days, we can see that people don't even have that much control over the basic instincts of their lives. What to speak of, you know, doing things like controlling their consciousness so they don't age. And the death rate is still 100%. And the old age rate is still 100%. After all was said,
aging is natural. Look at a lion. Look at a lion. A lion is born as a cub and dies of old age. A snake is the same. It seems looking at nature and that thing, something is born and ages and dies. And likewise, so I would see that as interfering with a natural process.
It's all in your mind. Aging is just wrong attitude.
Well, I can't see that in the mind of a lion. A lion. Nature is ages. I see the universe as aging. Rocks age. So it seems to me as though if I were to try to reverse that, I would be going in face, doing it against nature.
Things on the body, I think that's my understanding. Exactly. Not that one didn't get on with diet, but as far as he's concerned, because there's
Well, I've heard him say, quite bluntly, I've heard him say that aging need not happen. In fact, he said death need not even happen. He said, I don't know why anyone would want their body to last forever, but I don't want to rule out that possibility. It's just a question of what you think.
Prevent the cells stopping, ceasing to renew themselves. Stop renewing themselves. And it is the human individual who has the capacity to have the capacity is what the best
Yes.
The power, the influence of the mind on the physical body itself is enormous.
Yes. I like that subtle distinction you're making between so-called just by your mind being able to live, quote-unquote, forever, and the other way, dying at will. But the mortality rate is still 100%. So these are, of course, fine distinctions, which are not made.
Without the body having gone through the process of decay, of the cells fading to renew.
Now, how do we discriminate that kind of self-control from the self-control in which people can't even, just like we were talking to one man last night, I was telling him this as well, if we can't even control lust, how are we going to control our aging process?
We have an awful and long way to go. We are so far from that potential.
Why should we control lust? Why should we control lust? That was his answer. Why should we control lust? And that's what most people say.
If the individual asked him such a question were to, at the best of time, they would find out why they might run from Jesus.
Actually, in the Himalayas, there are yogis who they're living for hundreds of years. They still die, living hundreds of years. How do they do that? They slow down the breathing so much because they understand that lifespan, from the Vedic point of view, lifespan is measured in terms of breaths. So if you slow down your breaths, you actually increase your lifespan. But you see, Westerners measure lifespan in terms of years. The Vedas measure lifespan in terms of breath. So, in other words, if you slow down your breath, then the breath is your life. If you slow down your breathing rate, then that is your lifespan.
I would think that slowing down one's breath, but once again, it depends on whether one is doing that in a very controlling way or naturally. Like the breath can slow down naturally of its own force according to one's state of consciousness, but if one is using this control factor too much, it can become a very unnatural thing. But it is interesting that if it happened naturally, then it would improve the quality of one's life, slowing down one's breathing.
This way or that way, the point is that, ordinarily speaking, from the Vedic point of view, the lifespan is measured in breaths. So, therefore, for example, any serious yogi is celibate because during the during sexual activity, the breath is always very heightened. So they're careful about anything that makes the breath accelerate. Now, of course, in Bhagavad Gita, for example, you'll read that those who are full-fledged transcendentalists don't worry about this because their lifespan is not under the control of the laws of nature. Because of their complete harmonization with the cause of all causes, with the source, with Krishna, therefore they die when it's time to go somewhere else and render some transcendental service. So,
what Richard seems to be saying is like a sense of readiness, like they die when they're ready, not so much in terms of cell breakdown.
So then, ultimately, it seems we're getting back to the question which you also discussed last night. Are we part of a system of control, or are we the controller?
Free from control, not only from people and systems controlling individuals. I mean, a certain amount of control is actually healthy, but what unfortunately happens is that controls often go beyond sort of control.
If an individual needs to control those aspects of themselves which they like to change, and the mere fact they still need to exercise control to do that. It shows the Noveka point. When it happens without their meeting,
yes, this is I find that the missing factor today. It seems quite unpopular that, to say the least, cosmic control, what to speak of something beyond cosmic control, is definitely a missing element these days in terms of everyone's, most people's discussion. Are we part of a system of control that is far beyond government and so on and so forth? Are we destined to be free of any kind of control? Or are we the controller?
All those things are true. I'm not sure. Within the laws of underworld, the laws of cause and effect, the law of love, within the law, we have free will. For so long as we choose to use it. And insofar as we operate within the laws, not just the physical laws of our science at this stage, which so far lead to its own satisfaction, but the higher laws as well, the laws that we would know nothing about, but primarily cause and effect, the law of love. we live within those laws, and all that happens is within them. Now, if that is controlled, so be it, but I don't feel it is.
Just the fact that there are laws means you adhere and get a result. You don't adhere and get a result.
You have no option to adhere or not adhere. They are there. The law of cause and effect operates. The law of love operates.
Does that mean
how you operate in the environment of laws is entirely over to you.
But you will get the reaction to your choice.
You will get the result.
Which means you're under control.
No, you're not under control. Because you have the choice of how you operate.
In other words,
if you're swimming underwater, you have the option as to whether to breathe or not breathe.
But if you breathe, you'll get one result, and if you don't breathe, you get another result. But that's all been already decided.
But David, I think that we would
for example, this is what I mean. That if you work in harmony with the laws of nature, as you're saying, you get one result. And if you don't, you get another result. But you don't have the power to say, I won't work in harmony with the laws of nature, but I will get the other result as if I did work in harmony with the laws of nature. That way you're under control. You see what I'm saying? You can't break the laws of nature and get the same result.
They don't break. Therefore, you don't have the capacity to break them.
You cannot violate the laws of nature. You cannot go against the laws of nature and get the same result as someone who does go along with the laws of nature.
We're not on the same wavelength, but you can't not go along with it. They are fact.
For example, if you live your life...
Then you're still within the higher level.
If you live your life totally against, for example, you slaughter animals, you will not get the same kind of results from the laws of nature as someone who doesn't slaughter animals. Now you can't. You can't say, "Well, I slaughter animals and I want the same result as the one who doesn't." You can't do that.
Well, if you allow want to exist, then you have the effect of allowing want to exist with inside the result. If you allow want, need, or desire, or any result, to operate within you, then you experience the result of allowing want, need, or desire to be a part of your maker.
My basic point.
They're just absolutely.
Once again, it's subjective too. For example, it can be mercy killing. I mean, killing an animal can be done in many, many different ways, and killing an animal could be done in a loving way. It could be a mercy killing.
I think they were referring to slaughtering for meat.
And once again, that is also subjective because it's your state of mind when you slaughter. You can slaughter an animal in a state of anger. You can slaughter an animal where there's no fear. Where you're actually not got any negative mind state, and that so it is subjective. When you talk about slaughtering an animal, I think it comes down to this thing that we're bringing more and more in dialogue now, the qualitative approach to it. It's not just simply a question of slaughtering an animal. It's what it depends on one's state of consciousness, one's state of mind. When one slaughters an animal, that is actually crucial, and it's. Well, there's an infinite number of reasons probably for slaughtering an animal, and only one of them is for gaining food. You know, there's mercy killing, there's accidental, there's probably any number of reasons why one would actually slaughter an animal.
Okay, this brings us, we're getting into the areas which are very good here. Mercy killing, now. what we may call mercy actually may not turn out to be mercy. So who defines and what?
Well, the person,
and why?
Well, the person who does it defines it. I mean,
you're helping me out a lot, Joe. We're getting right to the areas I want to get to.
Of course, I mean,
this
is common sense, though. If I'm killing an animal as a mercy killing, for me it's mercy, but for another person it may not be.
But why is it mercy for you?
Well, it's got to happen. I mean,
why?
Show me the animal, confront me with the situation and I'll respond to it. But it's not the sort of thing that I would sort of hypothesize. I mean, let's put it this way. There have been occasionally instances where I have done a mercy killing. I don't stop around and ask people. It's a living situation. It's life.
Can you give me an example?
An animal with a backbreaking parent. You come back ultimately.
To do as you would be done by. Okay.
When you do take on arbitrary rights, which I say is how yours and another species, but I do not worry about doing that, because the right to take life is not true. But an instance of such an animal with a birth defect can't be helped. That has to be your guiding thing.
Okay, my sentiment
is... Unless you have the capacity to achieve the miracle of mending the animal's back.
Okay, my sentiment...
Most of us at this point don't have that capacity.
My sentiment, of course, maybe with you, gentlemen, but still, how do we know that's mercy? Can we see the whole picture? That is my point. But we call it mercy. Now...
It's only a word.
You're using the word. We call it a mercy killing, but maybe it's not mercy. There could be other things going on we don't see. For example, it could be that by, even though that animal is indeed suffering, by ending its life, we cause that animal to have to take birth again as that kind of animal, complete its particular time it's supposed to spend in that body before it comes to the human form.
Each person to their own life.
No, you're missing the point. I'm just introducing another perspective, you see.
We become an external factor to the situation of that animal and the whole of creation if we exercise our right of choice in the form of taking action.
We may think it's mercy. I'm just introducing another perspective. I'm not picking up on any dogma.
We may not even think at all, though. This is the whole point, though, David. Don't assume. We mustn't assume that we do everything, that everything we do is preceded by thought. That there are some.
In time, we should do nothing preceded by thought.
Okay, now, we're missing the point. That's something very exciting in our grasp. It may look like mercy to us. We may call it mercy killing, but how do we see the whole picture? Do we know the whole picture? It may be we're actually causing that living entity more pain by ending its life then. We didn't allow it to fulfill the natural time it's supposed to spend in that particular animal's body. It has to come back as that particular animal again and finish off. It has to take another birth as that animal to finish off those years that we might have prematurely ended. And that way it doesn't continue on its progress. The soul doesn't continue on its progress to the human body. So these are, in other words, I'm just saying that right now to introduce another perspective, a possibility. So in other words, what we call mercy actually might be getting us into a lot of trouble from the overall point of view.
It wouldn't be a lot of trouble. It would be fun.
But in any case, I'm just trying to introduce the notion that there could be a lot going on that's beyond our sentiments, our feelings, our knowledge, and therefore, if we're really going to live in harmony with the laws of nature, we've got to find out some way of knowing all these laws of nature. Otherwise, we're like always walking in a minefield.
Well, I see that as, I see in response to that, what you just posited there, I see the need for transformation of consciousness. That's the, for me, the fundamental need. From that will come the capacity to do the right thing. For example, whatever it is, whether it's an animal to kill or whether it's a person or whatever it is, the fundamental thing to me is to be in the right state of consciousness for one to be able to respond to do the right thing at the right time every moment.
I still like the laws of nature presentation. Laws mean you follow them, you get one result. You don't follow them, you get another result. Now, of course, whether you follow them or not, the reactions are all within the laws of nature. But the fact is, the laws of nature are there. And how are we going to find out about all these laws of nature? Because obviously, we may feel that I'm transforming my consciousness, just like I'm doing a mercy killing. We may feel that, but the laws of nature may say something else. So, are we the laws of nature?
We're not in opposition to the laws of nature. The transformation of consciousness is actually happening according to the laws of nature. It is in itself a natural evolution. Transformation of consciousness is happening through mutation.
And I hear you talk about consciousness. I would have difficulty mixing the two together like that.
Not mixing it, no. There are mutations in biology, but there are also many people accepting these days that there are also mutations in consciousness. And that it is a natural phenomenon.
Can you explain what mutation of consciousness
is? Well, because beyond time, that it is not within the duality, beyond space and time, and for no cause, it's acausal. It is beyond duality.
What is?
These mutations. Mutations happen.
May I postulate that it is not acausal for beyond duality, because nothing happened. If the causes are higher laws, then we know not of.
Well,
just like a scorpion lays eggs in the rice. So we look, but we look in the rice, we just see baby scorpions coming out. We don't see the mother. We think, acausal. It's just happening without any. But those who know understand the mother scorpion was here and left.
Mutations, biological mutations happen, organ development happens without any apparent purpose. This is something else that's been discovered in biology, that in terms of changes and mutations that happen on a biological level, they also are not necessarily happening according within the law of cause and effect.
All right, now
there's also the law of random.
Yes,
but first of all, if we posit that biology and consciousness, biological phenomena and consciousness phenomena can be understood the same way, all right, but if they're totally different, then we're kind of,
the relevance to what you're saying, movement shifts in the word you used was transmutation of consciousness.
Transformation?
There can be an effect going up to the collective consciousness or another world, which is part of why society of the race and it alters as the individuals alter. One of us is individual as a thing way beyond that one. And that is not unconnected with what you have just described as arrival of transmutation of consciousness.
So then in biology, mutations can bring about completely new a completely new species for
us. Consciousness is not within the area of science known as biology.
Even scientists are, well, a lot of them are admitting that these days. Nobel Prize winners are admitting that.
They're finding more and more about the laws that they knew not of, but they don't come within the ambit of the branch of science known as biology. Even now that we discover that we begin to measure the life force of the etheric body and so on, they still don't at this point, I don't think, include it in biology.
We're not equating biology with consciousness at all, but simply pointing out that mutations, biological mutations exist, and so do mutations of consciousness.
I think shifts, movements in evolution or devolution, the opposite of evolution, of consciousness do occur, and the reasons for their occurring, because they are effective, they're not caused.
So, you both mentioned laws of nature. Now, it would seem to me we should be interested in what is the origin of these laws? Laws of the universe, I'm sorry. Laws of the universe. What is the origin of these laws? Because law implies that we are subordinate in that. We must function according to these laws, and we just can't say, the hell with the laws, I'm going to get a different reaction than that which is prescribed by the laws.
There are ever higher and higher laws which we ourselves, because of what we are, have the capacity as we progress. The capacity to utilize to the point where, from the point of view of what you're studying now, it would appear that it might be no law.
So
that state of affairs is also a law.
So, naturally, would I be considered a young school kid if I would just say, well, shouldn't we be concerned with where these laws come from? These whatever laws. Shouldn't we be concerned with where they come from? And what might that not give us some insight into belonging to the universe or not belonging to the universe?
Well, on the one hand, we should, if we wish to pursue the path of knowledge. But however vast the position of knowledge by an individual, knowledge is not wisdom. And if some of us choose some of the longer paths, such as through knowledge, it always remains open to any one of us to take the short path, the path of love, where it will take it, because although it's the easiest, it's also the hardest. The universe is full of paradox. But with that, it's not incumbent upon us to pursue the path of knowledge. You can pursue the short.
Can you just, what do you mean, this sounds intriguing, the path of love. I mean, can you explain? Because, you know, this word love is bandied about in so many ways. You know?
Well, like all the important, the more important the word is, the harder it becomes to define.
But still, we need, look, I'm afraid we need to get some kind of grasp on this now.
You're edging with the boundaries of my capacity to edge the question.
Everybody talks about love.
Yeah, but we're going beyond the definition of love. Even with family, for example, I heard a woman say before a talk, it was the year of the family, I think it might have been last year, wasn't it? And she actually refused to give the definition of family, and I was a bit taken aback by that at first. I thought a bit presumptuous of her, and then I thought about, well, that was probably a good thing to say, because maybe we are not defining things nearly as much now, because they are even a family is beyond my definition.
An inverse definition, perhaps. A state of affairs whereby only love can exist. Is if there is absolutely no fear present in any of its very many forms. But if you start that one the other way, then the thing is not going to exist.
Now, if we don't understand the origin of the laws of the universe, how can we understand what love is?
Each reaches their own knowing of when it exists, when it begins by...
In other words, who defines
what? Looking at yourself.
Are we the supreme definers, or are we not? Are we defined by something else, or are we defining everything?
I don't think it comes like that. We don't go around defining things. Our understanding arises a lot, I think, experientially, and from our experience, we can sometimes, if it's useful, come up with a definition. Often definitions need not even. I think it depends on the individual. Obviously, you're a person who finds it useful to have definitions and define things. That's you. There's nothing wrong with this. That's your approach. My approach and probably other people, I used to actually be like that. I'd say, right, I want to define. But if we go through stages, I'm actually at a stage myself now where actually I'm not looking often for definitions. I'm not actually needing them. But there's nothing...
The mystery.
Yes. No, that's not correct either. I mean, there is the mystery, but there's also the definition. You can actually, the absence of all fear gets closer to it, but actually... I think what Richard might be saying is it's indefinable. There's mystical knowledge, for example, which is indefinable.
It's indefinable. We're going to define it.
You define it, you limit it, you reduce it to a definition, but you're reducing it.
Here's my point. Everyone says it's indefinable, yet in their life they're defining.
We have definitions like, you know, talking specifically. If we get into mathematics, you'll get lots of definitions, and in science, but we don't always... I mean, let's put it this way. If you actually want to have a definition of love, go out and get it. But don't assume that everyone necessarily...
But
don't be worried if someone's got a different definition.
Yeah,
there is a truth in what they were saying.
I want to have a definition of what love is. Action that doesn't have any time.
Especially if it makes sense to me, especially if we're the ones who define whether something is injurious or not. I like anything that we are defining. Well, as long as we are the definers, I'm all for that. That's the kind of universe I want to be in, where I'm the definer.
Is it?
Yeah.
You're not chasing? I didn't say I'm the definer. I think you...
But maybe we're looking, maybe there's a need to look for definition because we are defined. And therefore, we have to find out what has defined us, and then, naturally, we want to have definitions, recognizing that we are not the definers, we've been defined.
Definitions become much less important if we are intent on going beyond duality. It seems to me as though, like, for example, to have the creator and the created and the gap, and to live with the gap between them, I would think that we're living in a time, and the new consciousness I'm interpreting as one which is overcoming duality and going beyond. Now
is there duality? Who defined this duality mess anyway?
Well,
why is there duality? I don't want there to be duality.
Well,
I don't even want to transcend it. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to get into it. Just why is there this duality? I define out this, the duality, is that?
Well, there isn't the experience of such wisdom.
No, no. I refuse to admit that duality exists in any kind of way.
We've been talking dualistically most of the time, you know.
Right, yeah. Let's define it out. Let's tear it out of the dictionary. We've got that power. How dare this be defined upon me? I should be allowed to love and define love as I see fit. As far as I can see, Stalin is the greatest lover. According to me, you know that. It's very mysterious, but the love that he showed, never seen before. Greater love for his own countrymen has never been demonstrated.
What name would you state yourself? What name would you say yourself? Stalin.
Stalin.
Oh, Stalin.
Yes. Yeah. Lover, a great lover. He relieved the misery. Mercy killing. Yes, that is it. Mercy killing. Stalin. Beyond duality. He didn't make any distinction between his own countrymen or otherwise. Kill them all. Beyond duality. Love ended their miserable lives as peasants. Why not? What do you mean? How did I make that judgment? He was beyond duality. Friend or foe, you didn't distinguish. You just killed them all.
You seem to be suggesting that it's not possible to go beyond duality. Or, you know, or are you simply saying that you don't want to? We can say we don't want to. That's within the right of anyone to say that they don't want to, but it is evident that there are many people who have managed to go beyond duality and benefited very much from it. If we stick within duality all the time, we will never be free. The new consciousness goes beyond duality.
Duality is whatever you make it to be.
If you only listen to that,
whatever.
Listen to that, you and me, that's duality. The separation between.
I just
depends what you're doing.
Yeah.
How you experience.
Yeah, it's just all up to you. We are the definers. Even the laws are up to us. We define the laws.
Mind is the creator.
So we should just get right down into the business of creating each one of us in our own way and doing our own thing, and that's the way it is. Stalin was a mercy killer. Why? Because I said so.
We were to pick the beings and create.
You're creating all the time.
We are creating all the time, but if we pick the beings, we create something that is worthwhile and acceptable.
Why do we have to be acceptable to anybody? We are the definers. I say so.
I don't think there's any Alan new age and historian.
New age, old age, whatever. We are the definers.
Well, no one seems to be agreeing with you today. You're saying that, but no one's agreeing with you.
I feel you're taking the mickey out of the so-called Christian New Age that says, I'm a self-empowered person, and I'm the creator of everything, and nobody else has any say in my life. I think you're trying to take the mickey out of people who say that, and I don't think there's anyone who's been so far that actually believes in that philosophy.
Seriously speaking, I was not referring to that at all.
Well,
I'm referring to a deeper issue. Are we the definer or are we defined? This all relates to laws of the universe.
In other words, is there a God or isn't there?
Whatever.
There's a God.
Perhaps the whole subject matter could be dealt with if we just get to the origin of these laws of the universe.
Thank you. call it Lord Vishnu, don't they?
I'm just saying, perhaps this whole situation could be resolved if we got to discuss the origin of the laws of the universe. Because law means, even when used conventionally, law means if I drive on the right-hand side of the road, I have, you're on Broadway, get some reaction. I can choose, I will get the reaction.
There is no law that cannot be superseded by, overcome by, neutralized by a higher law.
Yeah.
And up the scale indefinitely.
So where did the laws come from? The higher, the lower, the in-between?
Mind.
Hmm?
Mind.
Our mind?
The devil power.
Devil makes laws. I go for that. Yeah, right.
The devil power made the laws of karma. It's called the negative power. And that's what most people are under, is the laws of karma. And so you say, it's the negative power, the power of karma. It's the negative, or Lord Vishnu.
50% of it's possible.
So.
It doesn't matter, if you're still under it, you still keep coming back, even if you do good deeds, you still come back to wreak your good deeds.
Are laws beneficial or unbeneficial? If the laws are beneficial, why would they be negative? Negative power.
Because they keep you reincarnation.
But is the law negative or our behavior in respect to the law negative?
The term negative doesn't necessarily mean bad. It's just like a charge and a battery. You have a positive and a negative. It is one word.
Okay.
I use that term negative not to mean bad. It just means that you're not out of the law of karma. You're under.
Okay, still we get to the point. I think it's very important. I think it resolves all these things we're trying to grope with, not being facetious either. If we get to the origin of a law, then we get to the origin of the defining potency, because law defines. Very important. I actually like that better than control, define. And that's what we all, so much of us, so many of us hate, to be defined. Yet it seems like in this world we are defined. Our capabilities are predetermined. Not capabilities, our options are predetermined. We have a choice amongst a limited set of options. Why is the game set up this way? Why, how, and who? Now, it would seem to me that the only way out of this conundrum is if somehow that we can take information from the source of the laws. Otherwise, we're always going to be just speculating on and on and on and arguing like this. If we can somehow or other take information from the source of the laws, then we might have the whole situation covered. Otherwise, we'll just be groping in the dark, well, I define it this way. I think it's that way. On and on it goes. And it may all be well and good, but still we're under the jurisdiction of these laws after all is said and done. So where do the laws come from? Why are they there? How can we get a complete understanding of the laws so that we don't get injurious effects due to not harmonizing with the problem.
If you
require
such an
answer.
And shouldn't we require it? Shouldn't a human being want?
No. I mean, I think this is where we have to speak for ourselves. Like, those questions that you're asking are valid for you, but they're not necessarily going to be questions that are meaningful or valid for other people. And this is the whole point, that we ask our own questions. They come from the heart, they're meaningful. And it's important for you and me to get answers to our own questions, not to the questions that other people ask. So those questions, those are your questions. They are the ones that you're asking. You find the answers and good luck to you, mate, but they're not my questions.
Or is it
about our questions?
Is it about to state the answer, mate?
Let's have the answer then.
Whether
your question.
Whether I'm interested.
So always remember that the question is more important than the answer.
Whether I'm interested in questioning the laws of New Zealand or not, I'm even as a foreigner, I'm bound by them. So it would behoove me to find out which side of the street to drive on for my well-being. Because even though I'm not a citizen of New Zealand, I'm bound by the law of New Zealand when I'm in New Zealand. They're not going to ship me back to the States to stand trial. I'll just stand trial here for driving on the wrong side of the road and killing people. So it seems like an intelligent human being would want to find out the laws of the land, so to speak, the laws of the universe. And then he would begin to think, he or she would begin to think, why are there these laws of the universe? Where do they come from? What's the purpose of the whole scheme? It would seem to me that that's just practicality. It makes complete sense. Now, of course, if we're not interested in asking those kind of questions, if I'm not interested in caring what side of the street you drive on in New Zealand, I certainly can go my merry way. But after many crack-ups, I probably will start to ask somebody, which side of the road should I drive on? So,
the individual will feel that that will be more complete, will be less affected by this ease, will be wholer in all respects if he is operating in harmony with the laws. And for that reason, for that reason, it's not essential for every individual to actually have a knowledge of the world.
But the human being, with his developed intelligence, that
has a drive to find
and must, otherwise.
So it depends on the situation. Like, you take the laws of the road, David, as an example. Now, some people in New Zealand can actually live quite well without any of that knowledge, because they are actually living in areas where there's no roads. And you could actually have... this is the whole point, where you can't generalize.
You're under the assumption. I don't expand the allegory beyond its obvious ground. Come on, John.
Well, what are we saying? What are we saying? That from talking in terms of specifics?
That we are defined, that the laws of the universe have been defined. We are defined in that we're operating within certain parameters. We should find out all these things specifically, and we should find the best way of finding out the complete system of universal law. And then naturally one would begin to think, where did the laws come from and why are they there? And is there an existence beyond the laws?
Including the law that creates this part of our makeup, this curiosity to find out where the laws come from.
That would seem to be the goal of the human form of life.
We need a public lawyer, right? We need a public lawyer behind the rules.
So without this kind of understanding, I don't see how we can judge anything. Just like I could run around saying Stalin was the greatest lover. And if our conclusion is that we're all the definers, and there's no need to, either we're all the definers or there's no need to define, then let Stalins exist. There'll be plenty of Stalins. Whatever. But nobody really accepts that in their gut.
I feel like Stalin.
Are they not fulfilling some karma and destiny as well? That has already been solved. Why should it be karma? Life is whatever you make it. If you want to kill people, that's up to you, and you'll get this. What makes you think you'll get a different reaction than someone who doesn't kill?
But there is karma.
That means we're defined. No one wants to. No one wants to be defined. Everyone wants to be the definer. So therefore, what I'm trying to point out, I please accept as my humble service in this discussion, is that a lot of these issues can easily be resolved simply by confronting the issue: am I defined or am I the definer? To what capacity can I define, and to what extent are things defined for me, and I'm defined in the first place? So this, for me, was my preliminary thinking in approaching Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and other Vedic texts. First, I had to go through all this. In other words, without going into whether this is right or that is right, whether John's way is right or my way is right, or even if we have our own way, whatever. The point is, do we have a right to define, or are we defined? And to what extent do we have the ability to define, and to what extent are things and ourselves defined for us?
In one sense, we define by our way. If we cease to hold opinion or preference on any matter whatsoever, then, in a sense, we would cease to exist. It's not part of the
although we're already defined.
We must allow for the fact that the universe is filled with paradox.
I would. Which is not definable. That's the whole point about it. But there are some things can be defined and some things can't be. But some things never will be.
Who decides?
Well, paradoxical. Science is discovering itself that the definitions that they made and things that they felt were defined before are no longer valid because of their discoveries. They've found that something that is so-called concrete and defined and clear-cut is no longer concrete, defined and clear-cut. But that doesn't mean to say that you can't define some things. So this is the question we're eradicating.
So how do we avoid going through this ceaseless process of, you know, thinking something's a mystery, then finding out it's not a mystery, then something else becomes a mystery, turns out not to be a mystery?
I don't think that's the way it happens.
So how is there a way to avoid this whole
transformation of consciousness? A lot of the difficulties, I think, fall away without eradicating anything or getting rid of anything, a lot of complexities, and by moving to a higher state of consciousness.
But who decides when our consciousness is transformed? What we might call a just like, you know, I thought my consciousness was transformed when I was 5 years old and started to understand baseball. I thought, wow, I've really come to a higher level. I thought that. I know the difference between the New York Yankees and the, you know, Philadelphia Phillies. I thought this is exciting. Is there some standard? Are we the standard? Once again, are we defined or are we the defined? Comes right back to this point. I don't see how.
I don't feel that we need to know. You do. I certainly get the impression you. I agree with Richard that some people.
There's a lot of people don't want to know.
Don't want to know or don't need to know. Some people probably don't want to know. Maybe some people don't need to know.
But how can we live in ignorance?
this generation is being obsessed with.
Why should we live in ignorance? We should get knowledge.
We are. We're all acquiring knowledge gradually. So, I mean, I would think that it would be true to say that we are acquiring knowledge.
But as you say, what we think is a mystery today is solved tomorrow. So in other words, when we say it's a mystery or undefined, maybe we should just say, just means we don't know right now. We're ignorant.
What's true today, what was true yesterday, is not true today. Except that.
Is there, okay, of course. It's relative truth. It's not true in all three phases of time, past, present, and future. Now, is there a way we can circumvent this whole scene? Otherwise, we're in for a, sounds like, according to what you say, we're in for a long experimental process of many births and deaths.
It's evolution. It's the long history of evolution.
The long and winding road. The long and winding road.
We can't change evolution.
Do we have to go through that way?
Yes.
Maybe we don't.
Part of it. No, we can't say we're part of the evolution.
Do we have to?
We have no choice.
No. We don't have to.
But who defines that we have no choice?
Well, seeing ourselves as belonging to the universe.
Who defines that we have no choice? Do we define we have no choice? See, once again, we get back to the same thing again. That's why I say it is essential to know these things. Otherwise, we're up against the brick wall again and again and again. Why the hell do we have to involve?
We create the brick wall. We create the problems by the questions that we ask.
Why do we have to involve?
Well, then that's fine. You ask that question, why do we have to evolve? I don't need to. Like, I accept at the moment.
You accept what?
Evolution as being a reality.
Who defined that evolution? Why does it have to be there?
These scientists went a long way to defining it in scientific terms. But then it has taken on a far broader context and meaning than the mere science.
I don't want to accept that reality.
Well, that's fine. That's not a problem to me. See, the thing is, we don't have to keep on reacting against each other by, like, you don't want to. That's not a problem for me.
Therefore, I say Stalin was the greatest lover. He was right where he should be in the evolutionary process, and he had love. We just have to learn how to see it in a different way.
Nobody in the room takes it seriously.
Why not? I protest. He saw reality that way.
Very simple question to answer in my case. Stalin, to me, was a...
Do you?
Was one of the cruelest, most deluded human beings, and I mean, so we don't have to go on...
To you! You say that!
That's right.
But he defined himself. He was a man of self-will.
To do what he liked.
Right! He chose to be that way. He defined himself.
Yeah. I want to get back to what you were talking about before when you were asking the question about do we have to go on with the evolution and what comes to mind is maybe the Ferris wheel. And there are those who are on the Ferris wheel and are happy to be on it. And there are those who are going, help, help, get me off. And those who yell, help, help, get me off loud enough to get heard. And someone turns up and teaches them how to get off it. But not everybody on the Ferris wheel is yelling, help, help, get me off. So they keep going round and round and round and round, and those who want to get off, get hurt.
So what's wrong going round and round and round?
Well,
it's up to you. It's all up to you.
Some of us have been round and round and round so many times that it's boring down here.
I like Stalin's way on the Ferris wheel. That was a great way.
Well, once you realize that you're dreaming, that you sometimes do that, you see, then it is possible. You can wake yourself up.
Yes, I'm dreaming that I am the diviner. It's all up to me. Stalin's a great guy. John's a great guy too. Stalin, you. I think you both the same.
Right.
Why should we get all up in these distinctions between a Stalin and somebody else? Just like he said about the Pope. What was his realization of the difference between him and the Pope? How many divisions does the Pope have? He's just a big one. I got some divisions, he's got some divisions. What's the difference? What's wrong? That was it. He defined his reality. He defined himself.
Doesn't mean a thing. I mean, of course, you can define yourself. You can be completely deluded and define yourself, and defining yourself doesn't mean a thing necessarily, unless it's based on reality.
Right.
We don't accept that there's reality, we can't go much further. I mean,
right! There you got it! Okay! Alright!
So you don't accept that there's reality.
But it's deluded stuff. This word, deluded, you know. How much do you say someone's deluded?
We don't have to. I do. I believe that there are, that it is possible to be deluded.
Where does the standard come from?
It comes from experience.
Your experience.
I have experienced delusion. And
you're imposing that experience on others.
No, you don't have to buy it. You see, you're in a state of reaction. You're like, we do this all the time. We talk with each other and then we react to it. But we can simply just listen to each other, and if we don't understand, if we don't accept or something, we can simply just leave it alone and get on with our own.
That's why I think they should have done with Stalin. They should have let him alone. Let him kill the whole world. I mean, we just listen to him. That's right. They used to call him Uncle Joe. FDR, the president of the States. He said, Uncle Joe, he's a nice man. They let him alone. Yeah, we should let guys like that alone because they're just doing their own vision of reality.
To what extent is a guy like him fulfilling a pre-set karma, and to what extent is he creating and defining a new situation?
It's just what it is when you make it.
Why not?
Then we have. Then what? Then what?
Well, maybe we need more people in the room who have no concept of belief.
Then what? If we don't go for that, then what do we go for? If we're not the definers, then what? Karma means you're not the defiant. So, okay.
It leaves you as the archetype.
Architect is limited by his materials. So where do the materials come from? We are the architect of our faith, so where do the materials come from that we generate our faith with? So once again, I think it's inescapable. Otherwise, I'm going to stick with Stalin. You know, if we're all the definers, then Stalin, he's a great guy. But if we're not the definers, and if there's some universal law, if there's some universal standard beyond what you and I think, then Stalin might be in big trouble, or we might be in big trouble.
What is it that you feel is inescapable?
What is inescapable?
You said you feel that it is inescapable.
Either we are the definers, or we are not.
That's the predicament for dualistic statements, either or. Doesn't have to be. You can ask a question on that plane.
Can that be true?
Yeah.
Are we the main definers?
Not the distinction.
Is it necessary to have a greater and a lesser thing? A man and a lesser.
If we go on forever, we can start building up an infinite hierarchy. It can help a certain something.
Yeah, right. That's why I'm focusing on the laws, because the major definer would define the laws.
Don't focus on anything.
Okay, Stalin.
You're focusing then on Stalin. Don't focus on. I mean,
whatever.
The disposition to meditation, which is a useful one, is that you don't actually in meditation have to actually focus on anything. You can simply be in a state of mind where you are
unfocused. We don't have to focus on Stalin. I mean, Stalin died. Look at Stalin's history.
He lives.
And he doesn't. He's not here. He's not confronting me. I haven't thought about Stalin for some time.
I know. Still.
Well, it's a matter of...
You're preoccupied with Stalin.
It's a fractional diversion that we spent a matter of relative importance. When I was a teenager, that was absolutely well aware of the force for what is generally termed evil in humanity. But filled with the feeling that the next most very important step for the human race was that the parents should come under one government. At that age, I felt that however bad the evil communism were, good, that it should take over the whole thing with its terrible form of government. And within a short time of one or two generations of that happening, the human beings would accept their character and improve on the form of government, having achieved unity. And that was how I saw it for a few years in 1968. Therefore, back to your Stalin thing, all these things are, you know, how you see them, what you make.
So it is universal law, I mean.
Is there a power of law that is beyond, I may feel this way, you may feel that way, but if we act a certain way, we get a certain reaction. Is there a power of law like that in the universe?
I believe so.
Then we must find out about these laws, where they come from. Otherwise, we cannot, it's quite obvious, we're walking around in a minefield.
That's an assumption you're making. I think what you need to say there, David, is that you feel you must, but not necessarily assume that everyone else. You're putting a must on it for you. That is true, but not necessarily.
Well, it's not a must. It is a fact that sooner or later you will. How necessary or otherwise it is. Be assumed
that's right, that's the whole point. And how you arrive at it, once again, is an entirely, I think, unique thing. But